Hello and welcome to ICCJ's podcast, where we discuss the latest transitional justice news and developments. In today's episodes, we turn to events in Tunisia, where post-revolution economics are proving a critical component of the country's ongoing efforts to provide reparations to victims. Tunisia is facing a deep economic crisis. Investments are still struggling to recover, and problems in the economic and financial sectors are persisting. These challenges have provided background to an ambitious approach to initiating transitional justice measures, and at the forefront of those discussions is the question of reparations for victims. ICCJ's Reparative Justice Program Director, Ruben Kranza, has just returned from Tunisia and joins us now to comment on what is unfolding on the ground. Ruben, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ruben, I was wondering if you could first tell us, what are the financial and economic challenges for Tunisia as it considers transitional justice measures such as reparations?
There has been significant debate in Tunisia over the cost of the transition and correspondingly the cost of transitional justice. At a forum with businessmen that I attended last week, where the president of the Tunisian Stock Exchange was a speaker as well, he did mention that the revolution had a significant impact on the Tunisian economy. It affected the economy in such a way that about 8 to 10% of GDP was reduced as a result of the revolution. Now, I wouldn't blame the revolution for that. I think you do have issues around dictatorships and the sustainability of dictatorships and their economic policies. But at the same time, it's a real implication for Tunisia and its economy in terms of how much it can afford to fund transitional justice mechanisms, including reparations. So the second part of that debate, of course, is the cost of transitional justice. As recently as a few months ago, those who were expressing reservations about funding for reparations said that it would cost so much money that it should instead go to development programs, for example. Those who expressed reservations about funding for reparations have also, of course, raised the fact that not all Tunisians will receive reparations, but mainly those who were victims of the dictatorship, and so have argued that money that you spend on reparations should instead go to all Tunisian citizens who are equally in need.
So you say not all Tunisian citizens will receive reparations, only victims. Who is a victim? Are we talking about victims under the former regime, people who were injured in the revolution?
Victim, insofar as reparations is concerned, will have a legal definition. We're talking of victims of human rights violations. Reparations as a matter of right means that it's the victims of human rights violations who are then entitled to reparations. Now, in Tunisia, the debate over the pending transitional justice bill includes a debate over the definition of victims. That debate, for instance, is in the form of the question, how far back should the transitional justice process in Tunisia go? Should it go as far back as independence, or should it only cover the period after the first president Bourguiba and then therefore beginning from Ben Ali? The second dimension of this is what they would consider human rights violations in Tunisia. The Tunisian revolution was driven by not only grievances involving physical violence committed by the dictatorship under Ben Ali, it was driven also, or even more importantly, by grievances over economic issues, over the lack of employment, over the marginalization of the interior regions of Tunisia, where most Tunisians agree the revolution, in fact, began not in Tunis, but in towns like Sidi Bouzid, Kasserine, Regeb. Mohamed Bouazizi did what he did, self-immolation in Sidi Bouzid, trigger of the revolution and, in fact, of the whole concept of the Arab Spring. So these questions of victimization will have far-ranging implications on how you design transitional justice and what kind of reparations you offer and who you offer it to.
You've just returned from Tunisia from this conference that brought together, as I understand, a lot of financial actors, government actors, who are interested in this relationship of doing justice through reparations programs. and how transitional justice can address kind of economic crimes of the past. Who was at this conference and what was the objective of the gathering?
The UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights organized this conference, and it was in response really to an ongoing dispute in Tunisia over how those who are perceived to have been close to Ben Ali but are part of the private sector can be held accountable. Right now, there are a number of Tunisian business persons who are barred from traveling, whose assets have been frozen, and are under investigation for their economic links to the Ben Ali family. These are non-state actors. These are not members of the police. These are not part of the Interior Ministry. These are business people and business organizations. Now, some of them want these investigations and these prohibitions on them either lifted or resolved. There is a proposal in the parliament, part of the Transitional Justice Bill, that proposes to conduct arbitration regarding economic crimes in Tunisia. There is some resistance in civil society in Tunisia, and they also attended this forum with business people, to arbitration because they see that this leads to reconciliation without accountability. In other words, this can lead to trade-offs between political leaders and Tunisian business people that excludes accountability, that excludes victims. On the other hand, you have legitimate concerns among business people that these can drive away investment, that this can stagnate the economy further, and this can implicate persons whose association with Ben Ali may not be as serious and as grievous as others who are associated with him. So this discussion was significant because it brings in a part of the country's history that isn't normally dealt with in other transitional justice processes, which is the economy, economic grievances across several sectors of society. Now, we contributed to that discussion by bringing in comparative experiences of how transitional justice mechanisms elsewhere have attempted to deal with economic issues. A good example is the recent report of the Kenya Truth Commission, because in that report, they did deal with issues like land grabbing and other economic crimes in Kenya. So these were discussed at that forum. I think they need more of these discussions as they go forward. You can't resolve these disputes in one meeting.
Reparations policies in other transitional contexts are often linked to truth commissions or at the outcome of criminal trials, for example, awarding reparations to victims in courts, but also through kind of truth-seeking processes. How do you see reparations playing out in Tunisia in connection with other kinds of transitional justice measures that are either being enacted or being discussed?
What's interesting in Tunisia is that even before they drafted the current transitional justice bill, and therefore even before they can have a truth commission, they already established reparations measures weeks after Ben Ali left. So you have a series of decrees that gave compensation to families of those who were killed or injured during the Tunisian Revolution from December 2011 onwards until Ben Ali left. You have measures that provide health care and free transportation to the same families. One of the earliest decrees issued in the post-Ben Ali administration was an amnesty for those who were either detained or those who were convicted of political offenses under Ben Ali. And those persons who were granted amnesty are now seeking the restitution of their employment, of their entitlement to university education, of various social and economic entitlements as part of the justice that they seek. Now, all of these things obviously cost a lot of money and have an impact on how you manage your transitional justice process. So because these measures were put in place before a truth commission or a transitional justice law was discussed, you have to then take into account the expectations that have been raised from these measures, including the fact that many of the promises made in these measures have only been half implemented. For example, compensation for those who were killed, only half of the amount of 20,000 dinar was given. So the families who are entitled to this amount are now expecting the other half. Healthcare for those who were injured was promised, but now they're only being promised reimbursement of expenses rather than the actual amount that they can spend. So again, that raises expectations. This does not even include yet the implementation of the restitution of employment, access to education, and the other benefits that those who were given amnesty for political offenses are entitled to under these measures. So these programs now have to be taken into account when a truth commission is established. This truth commission, which they call a commission on truth and dignity, will have to deal with the dignity part as well, because that's a very fundamental part of the revolution in Tunisia, and that's something that you can't separate from any transitional justice process being proposed.
Many others in the region, other transitioning societies, are watching Tunisia to see how they proceed with this transition. In your opinion, in terms of the progress of reparations so far, are there lessons to be learned already, or is it too early to say what kinds of lessons Tunisia could offer other countries in the region?
In general, I think there are perhaps two lessons that can already be learned from the experience in Tunisia so far. First, the reparations programs that are already in place in Tunisia were put in place in incremental, almost ad hoc terms. In other words, when victims of a certain event or series of events complain and have grievances, the government then responds by offering compensation, offering health care. So for example, when victims of an event that took place in 2008 in Gafsa, the so-called mining basin in Tunisia, complained and said, the dictator inflicted violence on workers in Tunisia, leading to the death of several people and injuries to others, they said they were also entitled to compensation. So the government then responded and said, we will now include you in all of these compensation measures as well. Now, that lesson shows that an ad hoc response is not going to be coherent and efficient in the long run. It's not coherent because you don't take into account violations across several periods and affecting several communities, but instead you take into account incidents and numbers of people in every incident. That will have budget implications, that will have capacity implications in terms of administering and distributing reparations. The second lesson is that the focus on physical integrity violations means that you will be excluding a significant number of people who experience violations in other forms, some of which may be physical, but not in terms of violence at the hands of the military or the police. And in Tunisia, and perhaps in other parts of the Middle East and North Africa, that has significance as well. Now, as an example, Article 8 of the current draft of the Transitional Justice Bill defines the violations that the proposed Truth Commission will address. And it includes, of course, the very basic violations against physical integrity that are present in other examples of Truth Commissions: killing, torture, disappearances, sexual violence. At the session I had with the National Constituent Assembly, where we discussed reparations last week, there were questions around whether this list is exclusive or whether they should try to include other violations suffered by other Tunisians in the past. Now, that is both problematic, but at the same time, an opportunity, because it does open the possibility of addressing issues around dignity, issues around economic grievances that many Tunisians raised during the revolution. An example that I asked during the session was whether Mohamed Bouazizi himself, had he survived, had he not died of his burns, whether Mohamed Bouazizi would be entitled to reparations under this transitional justice bill. He wasn't tortured, he wasn't detained, he wasn't killed by police or military agents, he wasn't disappeared. He burnt himself because he was banned from selling fruit. And so when you ask this question, I think it helps legislators in Tunisia look at their history instead of simply following a model of transitional justice that they see in other countries. It might help them formulate a law and a set of policies that respond to their situation rather than, you know, to a checklist of things that they see, they might think ought to be done because that's transitional justice.
Do you get the sense that the stories of these individuals are reaching the ears of policymakers and those in power to decide things like definitions of what you just talked about?
Some of the debates that have been going on in parliament and outside parliament in Tunisia over the question of reparations has obviously been animated by political suspicion, by the feeling that the other party or parties are promising compensation or promising reparations so that they can benefit their constituents, so that they can get the votes again of their constituents. And that distracts them from the real debate, which is, who should we cover through reparations? I think they do listen to what's being said by victims, and you do have emerging groups of victims and their families and communities speaking to parliamentarians, appearing in forums with businessmen, for example. But I think more needs to be done so that the debate over reparations can be brought up from what right now is a very partisan debate, and so that some of the questions that are being asked can be given answers that are both technical and sound rather than politically motivated.
Are there going to be major political moments that we can watch to see how these questions are unfolding, or any critical decisions coming up on reparations policy that you'll be paying attention to?
The three main developments that we're looking at is, of course, first, at the Ministry of Human Rights and Transitional Justice, which is the government ministry implementing reparations right now. We're helping them aggregate the data that they've gathered so far in implementing the reparations policies that I mentioned earlier. We are hopeful that in aggregating all the data they have about victims, the number of victims in different categories that they've offered reparations for, the gender of the victims that have been offered reparations and the implications of that in terms of family access to healthcare, transportation, all the other information that's relevant to not just individual victims, but the communities, that this aggregated data can then serve the Truth Commission that comes out of the Transitional Justice Bill. The second development we're watching is how this question of arbitration and economic crimes and the involvement of business people associated with Ben Ali can be resolved. Right now, there is a list of 114 persons who are deemed so close to Ben Ali that their assets have been requested frozen. And of course, we've seen that there has been an unfreezing of Ben Ali's assets, and so this question needs to be resolved urgently. But there is a separate list of about 250 other business people below this list of 114 who are banned from traveling, whose investments may also be frozen, and the government has to deal with these two lists in a way that distinguishes between those who are really associated with Ben Ali in such a way that you can't really pursue arbitration, you can't pursue reconciliation without accountability in dealing with them, on one hand, and on the other, deal with some of the 250 others in a way that accounts for their involvement, but at the same time does not deny them due process, which is what is probably happening now. The third development is, of course, the progress of the Transitional Justice Bill. Just last week, the Constituent Assembly in Tunisia was still deliberating on the various clauses of this bill. And I think they're close to agreeing on what it will look like, but there are still going to be future controversies in the implementation of the bill itself. Who will be part of the Truth Commission? What is the role of the political parties that will be involved in nominating the commissioners in this Truth Commission? What will you do with the Ministry of Human Rights and Transitional Justice, especially since it is also implementing separate mechanisms like reparations? All of these have to be put together, and I think it's important for policymakers in Tunisia to look at this from a very comprehensive, very broad perspective, because not every political battle has to be fought over each of these measures. I think they can agree on some of the measures that can move forward, especially those that our attempts at responding to grievances of victims, at our attempts at responding to precisely what drove the revolution in Tunisia.
Well, we will continue to follow these developments closely, as I'm sure you will, and hopefully you can join us in the future for an update on this. Ruben Carenza, director of ICTJ's Reparative Justice Program, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.